Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 2nd through 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Four stages, 100 performers, including the Greg Allman Band, Galactic with Macy Gray, and Buddy Guy. There will be after-hours performances, shows on the Portland Spirit, and much more. Again, that's the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Thursday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.fm/waterfrontbluesfestival2015.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Today we'll be talking with a Seattle filmmaker whose mythological skate punk movie has never been seen in Portland until now. The Oregon Historical Society and the Hollywood Theater are teaming up to screen the cult classic Shredder Orpheus tomorrow night at 9:30, and we'll hear from the director, Robert McGinley.
And we'll also be joined by visionary animator Rose Bond, who will be leading the biennial Boundary Crossings program this summer at the Pacific Northwest College of Art.
But first, we're going to be joined here by Josh Leek, who is the director of the Portland Film Festival, which is coming up in Portland here in a couple months' time. Josh, thanks so very much for joining us on the film show today, and welcome to KBOO.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy coming down here and chatting with you about movies.
So tell us, submissions have closed for the film festival. This is coming up around the lead up to Labor Day. But there's still plenty of things coming up between now and the first part of September.
Yeah, you know, it was amazing. We had such a great response from our festival last year. We had about 245 filmmakers that flew in from out of the state, which was amazing. Had somewhere around 23,000 Portlanders, people from Vancouver, people from all over Oregon that came and watched movies, and it was such an amazing experience. And Movie Maker Magazine actually named us one of the 25 coolest film festivals in the world. Yeah. It was a shock because it was like South by Southwest and then us, and I was like, oh, really? So it was an honor.
So last year it was a focus on screenwriting. What's the focus this year?
Well, you know, that's a good question. We call ourselves the Storytellers Festival because film isn't any longer just something you see in movie theaters, although it's my favorite. I love a big screen.
I think you're in good company there.
Yeah. Good. We really feel that filmmaking itself has taken on so many different forms that we've got to support it. So we do a lot of transmedia events. In fact, we have the person in charge of transmedia from Marvel Comics is coming to our festival to talk to us about how they do it for two of their shows, which is kind of amazing. But, you know, so we kind of open ourselves up for all types of education, all different types of classes and workshops. So this year we have three tracks. Actually, last year we had two tracks, which was screenwriting and acting. And this year we're opening up it to crew. So people are interested in cinematography, lighting. There's going to be a lot of classes densely held within our week of festivals. We have some great partners this year. We're working with SAG-AFTRA, which is the Actors Union. They're helping us put on two acting classes a day. Willamette Writers Group, which is one of the oldest writers group in the West Coast, is co-sponsoring our screenwriting classes, which we're going to have two screenwriting classes a day. In fact, we have some interesting people coming to teach classes, like Philip Seymour Hoffman's brother, who runs the Blue Cat screenplay competition, which is the premier screenplay competition in the world. Gordy Hoffman's going to come teach some classes. We have... you know, a lot of other amazing screenwriters. In fact, we've got some guys that worked with Oliver Stone and some other screenwriters that, you know, really have some interesting things to say, and they're willing to teach. And I think that's what's amazing about our festival is that we have films. In fact, last year we screened more films than any festival in the state. We screened 145 films last year, and, you know, you can watch films at our festival, but you can also learn. And I think that's one thing that really sets us apart is that we have so much education.
Well, what it sounds like is you're not just here for film buffs, but you're here for the whole film community. You're trying to build up the crew presence and the production presence here in Oregon.
Yeah, and you know, film right now, there are more people that work in film in Oregon than lumber.
That's interesting.
And that's pretty amazing, seeing that, you know, we've all been, you know, I grew up in Oregon, went to school in Portland, and, you know, born and raised, and lumber has always been, you know, our kind of lumber and shoes, I guess, we got to add Nike, but have been our kind of our stays. But film has really become an important part of our economy. And, you know, in fact, they're going through the legislature right now to improve the cap. To help bring more TV shows. And let me tell you something. What if I told you Steven Spielberg tried to come film a TV show in Portland, but he didn't come because there wasn't enough money in our incentive program? I got to tell you that as someone who loves Steven Spielberg films, I was ashamed that we couldn't have, done something to let him come film. I mean,
so have you become an activist for these, the subsidies?
It sure sounds like it. But if you look at the numbers, you know, they bring so much money back. And the thing that's different, I think, than a lot of industries is that when someone sees a coffee shop in a movie, when someone sees a trail in Wild, they're going to come visit it. You know, it's a marketing piece for Portland. Every single movie, every single TV show that's shot is, I can't tell you, when I travel, I was at the Stephen Colbert's film festival in New York called Montclair Film Festival here a couple weeks ago. And, you know, what's the thing he talks about? He's like, he's talking about Portlandia. And I'm like, you know, everyone talks to me about Portlandia. So it's one of those things, you know,
and for good or ill.
But in fact, I'm excited to say the producer of Portlandia will be at our festival doing some things as well.
David Kress, good.
He's
good
an amazing
man.
Guy. So
in the minute we have left, can you tell us how people can get information about all the upcoming programs and the festival that's coming up in September?
Yeah, well, we're waiting to do our, since we had so many submissions. In fact, we had somewhere around 2,400 submissions, which is amazing. A lot of my friends that run to older film festivals are like, what? But people love Portland. Go to our website, portlandfilmfestival.com. We're going to release our and announce our films that are screening around July 15th online. They can buy passes starting in the next 3 or 4 days, I'd say. If they just keep checking back our website, we're going to have some early bird prices on stuff. But we'll have over 150 movies this year, and over 200 hours of classes. So it's gonna be jam-packed. And we've got over 7 venues. We're still nailing down some of our education class locations, wink, wink. We'd love to see everyone out. And we have a big event actually coming the last day of the festival. I can't talk much about it, but I can tell you, George Romero.
Oh, wow. Well, we'll be checking back in with you. Josh Leek, director of the Portland Film Festival. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. It's great being here.
And now Jen has a guest who has a pretty amazing screening coming up.
First, they were thrashing. Then they were
hang
gloomin'.
Out for just
and now they're shredding their way to hell. Take a ride with Shredder Orpheus. When Eurydice is kidnapped by the Euthanasia Network, Orpheus enters a secret passage to the deadly underworld. Armed only with a futuristic guitar and a skateboard from hell, Orpheus is the only hope for the free world.
Well, that bit of its original trailer describes the 1989 Seattle post-apocalyptic skate punk cult update of the Orpheus myth, Robert McGinley's Shredder Orpheus. Better than I ever could, but what the hey, let's give it a go anyway. Shredder Orpheus takes place in a near-future dystopian Seattle where poor people live in shipping containers and hell is a TV studio for the rather Orwellian Euthanasia Broadcast Network. Orpheus is a skater who travels to hell armed with a magic guitar to save his girl. The cult classic film, which celebrated its 25th anniversary this year, is being presented by the Oregon Historical Society in the Hollywood Theater, local bastion of cult film screenings, Friday, tomorrow night at 9:30 p.m. They'll also air a 1983 short film entry into McGinley's Orpheus saga on 16mm. This week, I spoke with Robert McGinley, the film's writer, director, star, and general skate punk Orson Welles. Robert, thanks so much for joining us on KBOOT today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So at the time you made Shredder Orpheus, which premiered in 1989, you were really active in the Seattle punk and skate scenes as the artistic director of On the Boards in Seattle. What inspired you to make a skate punk film representative of that scene? And how is putting that world onto film fun and interesting for you?
Well, that's a great question, Jen. I was involved in both the skate and the music scene for those years, I guess, in the early 80s all the way through the early 90s especially. And the inspiration really for this started with, first I was a writer for a brief time for the Seattle Rocket, which was Seattle's rock magazine, and so I was covering both local shows as well as big shows that would come from out of town. Meanwhile, I was also involved with a bunch of friends that skated parking garages in downtown Seattle. So there'd be a group of anywhere from 12 to 20 of us that would sneak into downtown buildings after hours at night, and we would, you know, sort of like urban skiing. We'd take an elevator up to the top floor and then skate down. And that whole process of skateboarding as fast as we could down these crazy parking garage ramps. And that was played a good part in sort of my thinking about how to make a movie about the myth of Orpheus on skateboards.
As you say, and as we can tell from the title, Shredder Orpheus is an update of that myth. Shredder Orpheus has an electric guitar. He travels into hell armed with a skateboard. What was your interest in the myth at that time? I've read, for one, that you found influence in Jean Cocteau's Orpheus, which was another update. What drew you to the Orpheus myth?
Well, I was a big fan of the story in general. It's Western civilization's oldest love story. And as that, you know, it's about love triumphing over death. In the Greek version, gods looked down on Orpheus as a hero in the sense that he was the only mortal to go to the world of the dead and attempted to return. And I thought, well, you know, this would be kind of a really cool story to do with a musician. I mean, because Orpheus was a musician, and the power of the lyre of, you know, that instrument is the reason that he was able to cross the river Styx and cross the river of forgetfulness, go to and confront the three-headed Cerberus dog and actually get an audience with Hades in the underworld. And you think about the hero's journey and you put it in a rock and roll skateboard world, you know, just seemed like a natural fit to my quirky little head.
I wonder if you could give us some highlights of the musicians and the. I understand Axel was played by a Seattle poet.
We had just an amazing opportunity to work with Steve and Jesse Bernstein, who was, for most people's opinion, I would say, our Seattle's poet laureate. I mean, he was amazing. In fact, he performed at a lot of punk shows. And, you know, sometimes he would get booed off the stage and people would be screaming, "We want the music." And then he would say, "Well, this is music, blankety blank, you know, like, I don't know." And he's the voiceover character in the movie, and he is such a treat to watch every time. And as far as the music goes, it was composed by Roland Barker, who at the time was a member of the industrial punk band called Ministry. So was a fellow by the name of Bill Rieflin, who is this amazing percussionist. He just got finished doing a tour with King Crimson. And Dennis Ray plays guitar, and then Amy Denio, who is another stalwart Seattle musician, on bass. So that was our shredder band. And we had to come up, at the time there wasn't really a genre for skate punk music. So, you know, we said, well, we're going to kind of go surf and we're going to kind of rev it up and kind of do that. By the way, a little plug, Light in the Attic Records released the soundtrack record, and we have a full soundtrack record, and it comes packaged with a remastered DVD of the film.
So your story starts off in Gray Zone, which are housing products made up of shipping containers in a near-future dystopia. How did you find transforming Seattle of that time into a post-apocalyptic landscape interesting? And what elements of how Seattle was at the time do you think come through in this movie?
The interesting thing about Seattle and Seattle today is that there is just a huge homeless population. And so I thought, well, the city's answer to, you know, low-income housing for disenfranchised people would be retrofitting shipping containers in such a way that they could be living units. And actually, here in the last few years in several cities, Detroit among them, that's actually happening. You know, we have, you know, a situation here where the disparity between, you know, people who have, you know, high-tech jobs in the new tech world, new technology jobs, and the people that do not, you know, we're starting to see more of a problem in this area. And so I think it was just kind of a natural fit, you know. And also, the south of Seattle is just kind of a really romantic place in a strange way, because it's like this industrial area, but it has its own kind of beauty and visual stimulus for me, and it's still there. It, actually, every port city does in a way, but I think there's something very special about Seattle's version of this.
Mm-hmm. So as a radio journalist, you know, especially at an independent station like ours, I am always really interested in critiques of corporate media. And so I kind of giggled to myself with glee when I realized that in your film, Hell is a television network and Hades is this TV exec suit. What are some main points you were trying to make about media and how it affects people?
Well, I've been obsessed about this idea for many years. In fact, the new project that I'm working on incorporates this. The idea that media is available to people in such quantities. We're just blasted with corporate messages 24/7. I'm a firm believer that that affects your consciousness in some subtle and interesting ways. So I've always been interested in the manipulation of human consciousness by corporate entities through media. And of course, in those days, it was primarily the television. And now we have the internet, which is exponentially more seductive. And it's rather frightening in to me that we don't seem to have much immunity for it. We have huge portions of our population here in this country that let media think for us.
Well, I'm always so glad to see issues like this explored in cult film. I wanted to ask, do you feel like the era of cult filmmaking, which produced this film, Shredder Orpheus, still lives on? You know, I've seen the film described as gonzo, which I think is fitting. Is gonzo filmmaking still happening, still possible?
I hope so. I know when you use the word gonzo, I immediately think of Hunter Thompson and gonzo journalism. But there's a certain irreverent critique that needs to keep happening in the culture if we're going to have a healthy culture, because we need enough people thinking in alternative ways, thinking outside the box, to really keep us connected with what it means to be human.
Again, that was Robert McGinley, the writer, director, and star of Shredder Orpheus, which screens tomorrow night, Friday at 9:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, along with the 1983 short Orpheus and Eurydice. You can find more info on the film and the screening at hollywoodtheater.org or at the film's website, shredderorpheus.com. Coming up next, Conch chats with Rose Bond of the PNCA's Boundary Crossings Institute when the film show continues on KBOO-FM.
Yes, thank you, Jen. You're listening to The Film Show on KBOO. I'm S.W. Counselor, and we are delighted to be joined once again in the studio by Rose Bond, making a return visit. She is a visionary animator, just a legend in Portland and around the world, and she is bringing her biennial Boundary Crossings Institute in Animation Arts, Animated Arts, back to Portland at the Portland at the Pacific Northwest College of Art this year. And there are still slots available. There's still seats available for students. Rose, welcome back to KBOO. Welcome back to the film show.
Great to be here.
So we're going to intro our little segment here with some audio that you brought with you. And tell us a little bit about this clip.
I believe that what we're going to hear right now is an intro from a piece I did in the UK by called Broadsided at the Exeter Castle. And this is a piece by Heather Perkins, Portland, great Portland composer.
All right. Let's listen to the Broadsided piece. The great sound artist Heather Perkins, who's also collaborated with KBOO. And this brings up, before we talk about your class, your program that's coming up, you have done a great deal of touring around with your very, very visible public animations, not just here in Portland at various buildings with multiple projectors, but also around England. And you're going to be doing that again very soon.
Actually, I'll be giving a paper in Canterbury at the Society of Animation Studies Conference, which sounds a little stuffy, but there's actually really exciting people in that group right now that are looking at animation in a very broad way. So I'll be there giving a paper, talking a little bit about, I guess, what you could call expanded cinema or expanded animation, this idea that, yeah, animation exists in entertainment and in film, but it also exists more and more in devices and screens that surround us. And just questioning what's the content of that, who's making that, and why is it just consumerist?
Now, anybody who remembers back to the summer of 2007, you did a very public rollout of expanded cinema at the Platform Festival of Animation.
Yeah.
And
legendary.
You had a whole bunch of people bring their outdoor and indoor interactive projects and events into the city, into Pacific Northwest College of Art. And so you have established Boundary Crossings as kind of a way to move that forward and to bring new people into that sphere.
Exactly. Yeah, Boundary Crossings is a two-week intensive. So people come, there's grad students, upper division students, but also people, mid-career artists, painters, sculptors, whatever, that want their work to move. And they don't want to take an animation class where they're drawing cute animals. So they see us, they see the kind of work that is coming out of this, so they come. So we've had people from Copenhagen, New Zealand, we've got somebody from Singapore this year. So it makes a really interesting mix of people. I bring in a co-teacher this year. It's Pedro Sarrazina from Lisbon, Portugal. Pedro, you may know animation people. You may know The Cat in the Moon, that beautiful black and white film. That's Pedro's film. And he has now turned his attention, he's trying to get a PhD, but he's also turned his attention to the idea of animated installation. and is doing a piece in Lisbon as we speak. I'll also be joined by Marina Zirkow from the Tisch School of Arts. She'll be a visiting artist in the program. She's with the interactive, what's it called at Tisch? The Interactive Technology Program, ITP.
Wow.
And then also I'm bringing in Julie Perini. I love Julie Perini, and you guys know here at KABU from Arresting Power, that film. She's also an experimental filmmaker, and she'll be also a visiting artist. So it's a rich kind of deal for 2 weeks, all day.
2 weeks.
And
wow.
Then it culminates on August 9th. So it starts on July 27th and culminates on August 9th with a public showcase of work that was produced and created during the Institute.
Now you've got a very broad and interesting theme for this year, and that theme has to do with space.
Yeah, it's called Identity in Space, No Roadmap. And if you know animation, you know that space and time are really at the heart of animation. That's what it's all about. But again, with this...
Playing with either one or both.
Oh, yeah. In this sort of world bounded only by your imagination. So with this proliferation of digital technologies, animations expanded beyond 2D, what we're talking about here is... this kind of work that exists now in malls, bars, on the street, buildings. This is the potential is there, performance. And so we'll be looking at this idea of space as a social product and space as these overlapping moments, overlapping histories, and using that as a kind of springboard to think about work in a sort of thematic way, but giving people all the individual freedom that they need to pursue the work that's important to them.
Everything is animated these days, it seems.
It seems like it, yeah.
Well, Rose, before you go, can you give our listeners some information about Boundary Crossings and how to get involved, either as a potential student, you still have openings, or as a viewer when the Institute is done and the exhibition starts?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. All you have to do is Google Boundary Crossings, PNCA, that'll get you there. Boundary Crossings Animated Arts, that'll get you there. There's information online on how to apply, and there's also information on the public events. So we'll be having free panel discussions, artist talks. We'll be doing a screening with the Hollywood on Pedro Sarrazina, his work, his selection of Portuguese animation. And then, like I say, the final showcase on August 9th at PNCA, the new PNCA, 511 Northwest Broadway. If you haven't seen it, come on down. It's pretty cool.
Oh, Rose Bond, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming in. And let us know when you got something new and exciting coming up. It always seems like you do.
Will do, Conch. Thank you. Thanks,
and,
Jen.
And yeah. Now here's Jen, who's been compiling this month's film events calendar.
Oh, yes. I haven't quite got a year ready for you folks yet, but here are some film events coming up in the next month in the Portland area. Tonight, June 25th, the Hollywood Theater presents the next installment of their Mississippi Records Music and Film Series, a screening of Don't Think I've Forgotten, Cambodia's Lost Rock and Roll. The music doc follows the birth and near destruction of Cambodian rock music in the 60s and 70s. Details are available at hollywoodtheater.org.
And it's not too late to catch the end of the Portland Jewish Film Festival. The Northwest Film Center still has 4 screenings left in the fest, running today through Sunday the 28th. More information about the remaining films and showtimes can be found at nwfilm.org.
Tomorrow, June 26th, the Northwest Film Center will host animator Andy Smetanka as he presents his first feature, And We Were Young, at 7 p.m. It's a stop-motion paper puppet animated oral history focusing on World War I. Details can be found at nwfilm.org.
On June 30th, the Clinton Street Theater presents Stonewall Uprising at 7 p.m. The documentary features personal stories of the famous raid of New York City's gay bar, the Stonewall Inn, and subsequent riot that sparked the gay rights movement. Co-presenters, the Democratic Party of Oregon's LGBT caucus, will lead a discussion following the film. More info, cstpdx.com.
On July 9th, KABU's own KABU at the Clinton series continues with a 7 p.m. screening of the reggae film classic, The Harder They Come, at the Clinton Street Theater. Details on that can be found at cstpdx.com or at our website, kboo.fm.
On July 9th and 12th, the Northwest Film Center will screen the documentary Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry, followed by Ai Weiwei, The Fake Case on the 19th. These films explore the work of the famous Chinese dissident artist and follow his fight against censorship by the Chinese government. The screenings are in conjunction with a current Ai Weiwei exhibition at the Portland Art Museum entitled Circle of Animals, Zodiac Heads, Gold. Showtimes and more info can be found at nwfilm.org.
On July 16th, the Northwest Film Center kicks off, once again, Top Down Rooftop Cinema, the annual outdoor summer screening series atop Hotel Deluxe's parking structure. This year's opening night goes to A Song of the Thin Man of the classic Screwball Thin Man series. Top Down continues every Thursday night at 8. We have Sexy Beast coming up on July 23rd and The 10th Victim coming up on July 30th. Details on all Top Down screenings this summer can be found at nwfilm.org.
From July 17th through the 19th, the Hollywood Theater presents its next 70mm screening, Vertigo, starring Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak, in celebration of the Hollywood Theater's 89th birthday. More info on advanced ticketing can be found at hollywoodtheater.org. And
on July 25th, the Latino Gay Pride Festival presents the documentary El Canto de Colibri at the Hollywood Theater at 7 p.m. The film focuses on Latino fathers whose LGBT children have come out to them. The director will be in attendance for a post-screening panel with families featured in the film. Details can be found at hollywoodtheater.org. And that about wraps it up for the calendar this month.
Yes, and thank you for tuning in for this month's edition of The Film Show. I'm SW Kanzer. Thanks to our guests, Rose Bond, Robert McGinley, and Josh Leek. And thanks always to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web.
Yeah, I've been Jen Chavez joining you today. The audio for this show, as well as our extended interviews, will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And you can keep up with us on Twitter at kboofilmshow.
Now stay tuned for